Hey, all you rad dads out there.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Brett here, bringing you another episode of The Rad Dads Show, the punk rock parenting podcast where we ask inspiring dads the question, what does it mean to be a rad dad? Today, I'm bringing you an interview with Canadian punk rock royalty, John Wright of No Means No, the Hanson Brothers, and most recently, Dead Bob, sat down with Christian to share his thoughts as a dad to two sons, aged 28 and 24. Christian and John discuss teaching kids confidence in themselves and the importance of nurturing kids instead of controlling them. They also chat about creativity, and John asserts that kids are natural artists. We just have to give them opportunities to keep it up as they get older. And they also talk about finding a way to enjoy the things your kids are into, in addition to showing them the things you're into. And of course, they talk about John's new project, Dead Bob, and how it came to be, as well as the new No Means No book, From Obscurity to Oblivion, by Jason Lamb. So what are we waiting for? Let's get into it. Here's John Wright on The Rad Dads Show.
Welcome to The Rad Dads Show. Tell our audience who we have here. Who are you?
I am John Wright, and maybe you're familiar with No Means No, which was a band that I played with for many, many years, starting back in about 1979 or 80. And of course, then also spawned the Hanson Brothers. And most recently, gotten back into playing music with a new band called Dead Bob.
And you're a dad.
And I am a dad. Been a dad for a little while. My oldest son just turned 28. And my youngest son is 24.
Ooh. So you are an experienced rad dad.
To some degree, I suppose. My dad duties are they're more the old man that lives up in Lund.
There you go. Do you consider yourself a rad dad?
I don't know. I think I would, I suppose in a way, because, for instance, my father, who unfortunately died rather young, and I didn't really get to know him too much as an adult, really at all. He died when I was 19 years old. So, I think it's a bit strange though, when I was 19 years old and listening to punk rock music, it really had nothing to do with my parents or their generation. And this was nothing that they would understand, or, I mean, they were very supportive of music. We made a lot of noise in their basement, my brother and I, and they put up with it. But now it seems my relationship with my kids is, as I mentioned before, got officially started here, I'm listening to a playlist of my younger son playing all sorts of music that I was listening to back in the 80s and whatever. Just the generations are somewhat blurred now, I think, to some degree. And you know, when I was anybody that was 20 or 30 years older than me when I was 19 lived in an ancient age of prehistory. And now that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, I kind of, the experience that I've had with music was, I remember going to the mall and my mom taking me to the mall and had money to buy a cassette. And I ended up buying the Sex Pistols, never mind the Bullocks cassette. And I she took me home and she's like, oh, what cassette did you buy? And I brought her an old Metallica cassette. And she's like, you didn't buy that. I was like, okay. And I brought down the Sex Pistols cassette, and because I thought I was going to get in trouble with the word, yeah, like sex. Right. And she's like, oh, the Sex Pistols, I know them. I'm like, oh, really? But like, yeah, there was lots of music in my house. Like my mom listened to a lot, Bob Marley and stuff like that, but it was never.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's a bit blurred that, in the fact that did you introduce your kids to music, like in terms of like, did you take them to shows and that sort of thing? Or did you?
Certainly we listened to a lot of music, not necessarily. They both saw No Means No when they were young, but we didn't go to too many concerts so much. But played a lot of music, you know, in the car, of course, driving them everywhere that they had to be driven every day for hours upon hours. A lot of CDs getting played, and we listened to stuff they liked and listened to stuff I liked. And we talked a lot about music, and they both, well, mostly my older son, he took music lessons. He played viola right to the very end, right to grade 10, and picked up the guitar early. My other son did some piano, but didn't really stick with it. But he's also a very natural musician. He plays guitar and plays drums, more just for fun. My older one plays a little more seriously, has actually made a record with a friend and put it out on Spotify and plays some live music. But yeah, we went to a few things, but, you know, of course, I was always involved in music. And for me, you know, touring and playing music a lot, when I came home, it was kind of about not being involved in the music world and being involved in, you know, soccer or something.
Yeah, I'm always kind of curious. That's why I kind of went there. I was just curious of how the relationship between musicians, parent, like the parents that are musicians and their kids kind of evolve. Because one of the things that we do with Rad Dads, so it's really, this show is an offshoot of an organization that I run in Edmonton called Rad Dad Edmonton.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we try to do is empower dads to get involved in their community. And we do that in various ways. One way we do, and we've tended to do the last couple of years, is host kind of all age or ragers, kind of like all age punk shows with bands that, and I'm just always kind of curious of how that kind of relationship unfolds, because I found my life was really kind of changed, I would say, by music. Like going to my first punk show at the Bronx in Edmonton when I was like 12 and 13, it really like opened my eyes. And I can imagine or still know that feeling, and I want to kind of introduce that feeling to other kids. And I always wonder, though, is like, am I forcing this on my kids, or is it in your case, did you force music on them, or is it just because that was in your house and you never
Well, force is a pretty strong word. It certainly encouraged them. And music, learning music is not just about learning music. It really helps you develop all sorts of creativity, makes your mind work in a different way. And it's fun. But no, like I say, my younger son really didn't progress that far. He took about 3 years and he wasn't that interested. So it wasn't like, you know, forcing him to, you have to keep doing this. You know, he was exposed, he had fun for what he did, and then later as a teenager he started picking it up again and playing on his own. I think the arts are, you know, children are natural artists in a lot of ways, and it, you know, often just drifts away. It's not, you know, overly emphasized in school. It's certainly emphasized when they're very young, but then it seems to be considered not quite so important. But I think that any time that a child can be creative is a child that's learning. It's something, you know, it's activating their brain in a positive way, I think. And there's a sense of accomplishment that goes along with it. So kids often need some prodding a little bit to move them forward. But no, not forcing. There's no point in forcing anybody to do anything they don't want to do. It just doesn't make any. What do you want to do? You know, you just keep finding things that maybe they can try and do. And this could go on well into their 30s.
Perfect. What makes a dad a rad dad? Like, what are some traits of a rad dad, you think?
Rad dad. Well, I think just that, more nurturing, not so controlling. I think traditionally, you know, I certainly grew up in an age where fathers were either not that engaged or were often overly engaged in controlling the destiny of their children. I don't know. It's a bit of a cliche. I think people are people, and There's probably a lot of that still now, and maybe there wasn't as much of it back then as I thought. But I think a rad dad is somebody who is well, it helps if what your kids do is fun for you too, and you like it. Then you can be more engaged with what they do. I never played any video games until my kids played video games. And then I kind of started to like it and have fun, mainly because it was kind of like, playing Halo or something. It was like, wow, this is like a comic book, only you operate the characters in front of you. And I was able to find a way of just enjoying what they were enjoying. And whether I was rad because of that or just annoying because I wouldn't leave the room and let them play by themselves. Oh, well, they did plenty of that, believe me. Being open to what your kids like to do, I suppose, and then and being honest about enjoying those things as well. Like so many kids, their mother and I split up. At some point, their mother and I aren't together as a couple. We muddled through and kids know that they're loved by both their parents, and keeping all that stuff between you and your partner and not involving your kids with the nasty stuff anyway, although there wasn't really any nasty stuff with us. Be a positive figure in their life.
to me, it's that simple. I agree with you.
It's that simple, yeah. And, don't be an asshole.
In what ways did fatherhood change you, or did it?
Well, expecting to be a father, actually. All through my 20s, I was involved with music and punk rock right out of... during high school, right out of high school, and partying, having fun, playing music, traveling a bit, and then Know Me Snow became more of a more and more awkward time. My brother and I, and then Andy, of course, at the beginning, and we just started pursuing that more and more. And so throughout my 20s, I was just playing music, and had. I had one long-term relationship in there. It was about 6 years, but music became more and more and more encompassing, all-encompassing, and what I was really focused on. Having kids was not even on the radar at all. But like many people, you get to that 28, 30 years old, I believe, most people change around that time. They either become disillusioned with what they're doing and find other things to do, or they become even more focused on what they have, or they look at life a little bit differently, probably a relationship change. That certainly happened with me. And then I found myself involved with a woman who was like, I want to have kids. And I'm like, okay. So... both our children were planned, and I was like, yeah, why not? How would that change me? Well, I think it's like any parent, it's somewhat unsettled when, the small child begins to grow and you realize how much responsibility you have there and that they're a person. And then next thing you know, they're two persons, and just all the same, earning a living, having a good place for them to live. So, of course, it changed my life quite radically from, wandering off and traveling. Although I kept traveling, the band never stopped. Their dad was a dad that was away for a month at a time, not unlike being a sailor, I suppose, is a good analogy to being a touring musician. You're just gone for a while, and then you come back. So it's the sense of how I pursued my music didn't change a lot, but, and I was quite happy. I mean, domestic life has always been, I'm totally comfortable with that. I'm comfortable with being a domestic animal around the house. Right, sweetheart?
Did it change?
And also when you're playing music and you're in nightclubs for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks at a stretch, you come home, you just like being home. And, you know, I come off tour, you fly home, say from Europe, you arrive and you're all jet lagged and you're awake at 4 a.m. It was perfect. You're bang right back into kid time and not missing a beat in that respect. So, and the beauty of the being a touring musician and not having a job, like a 9-to-5 day job at home, when I was at home, then you're full-time dad, stay-at-home dad.
Focused, yeah. That's
so that was wonderful. Their mother worked incredibly hard. She worked in the, she's kind of retiring now, in the film industry here in Vancouver. And, you know, she's working 60 hours a week. So it was hard when I was away, having childcare and whatnot, figuring that all out. And a lot on her shoulders when I'm away. But the flip side of that, of course, is the, like I say, when I'm home, then you're there 100% the whole time. So it was kind of nice in that respect that I could be basically a stay home dad with the kids.
Did you have any fears about coming to dad?
Fears?
Yeah.
No, not really. Do things mostly quite obliviously in my life. It's after the fact, like, okay. No, not fear so much. Like I say, I never really expected, certainly in my early adulthood, to become a father or to have a family. But when the time came, it was like, okay, I'm ready to do this. I'll do the best I can.
How old were you when you had your first son?
35, I think. Okay. I was 30. When did I turn 30? In 1992. I was born in 62, 1992, 34. My first son was born in 1996.
Yeah.
That's another change in life, too. I kind of subscribe to the 7-year cycle in people's lives. So that was the start of the next cycle for me.
Yeah. Mine's about a 7 or 8 cycle too. I've really noticed that with my career. I'm a school teacher. And so it seems like every 6, 7, 8 years, I need to change schools or do something kind of different. And
It seems to line up, you know, your first 7 years, you're kind of, you become a kid at around 7. Then you're kind of a kid until, you know, 13, 14. And then you hit puberty and you become a teenager. And then, you know, you're legally an adult at 18. But I think by 21, you've kind of gone through school. You know, if you went to university, you're just kind of getting out of that. 21, 22, maybe you want to travel. You kind of have your 20s. And then around 28, you start to reevaluate. I find people tend to reevaluate their lives as they close in on 30. For me, 35 was starting a family. 42 was, you know, my marriage breaking up. What happened at 49? I don't know.
I was gonna ask you that. I'm 46, so I'm approaching that, you know,
46. Yeah,
so I'm curious what's gonna happen. Although
49. When I was 49. Oh, there you go. Was it really?
You just turned.
Oh, 51. 51. Yeah, 51. 49 was another bad marriage decision, of which was resolved when I met Wendy.
There we go. Excellent. What's the most rewarding aspects of being a dad?
I guess rewarding when you're kids avoid pitfalls. My kids never ended up with bad drug habits, and not that they don't mind partying, and that's fine by me. I did a lot of that when I was a kid as well, but they both have a good head on their shoulders. And I think that their mother and myself did a good job of teaching them. And so they have the confidence in themselves to make decisions, make good decisions. They found good friends. And I think that's when I grew up too. I was, I think, blessed with the fact that I had a really good group of friends all the time. And yeah, we get in some trouble and have some fun, but it didn't lead into some, you know, down some dark paths. So I feel proud of both my sons. And I think that that's when you can have that feeling, you can say, okay, well, you know, for better or for worse, probably did a pretty decent job. Certainly their mother was an amazing mother. And so, yeah, it's a pretty of a difficult kind of question. You know, you don't want to just sort of wave your own flag and pat yourself on the back. But rewarding to see two young lives that are vibrant, intelligent, moving forward in their lives and, you know, facing some struggles and whatnot, like everybody does, but, you know, both of them happy, pretty much.
That's great. That's what you want. You described a little bit, you touched on it, the relationship with your father. So what was that like? You said he passed away when you were pretty young.
Well, like I say, it was, I regret the fact that my father died of a heart attack when he was 53. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, 53 is pretty young these days. It was relatively young in his day too, for sure. But as a 19-year-old, just kind of coming out of high school and stuff, it didn't really occur to me just kind of how young he did die. But what occurred to me is that it's a shame that I couldn't get to know my father as an adult. I think we would have got along famously in that respect. My father was the middle of nine kids. And he, you know, he came, you know, he grew up in a different era. Men were brought up differently in those days. But he was a sweetheart. He was strict because he probably felt that that was his job, but not really strict because he didn't really like it. Not from, at least I was fourth of, you know, I was the last one along. I think they got all their parenting done on my older brother and sister, and they're the damaged ones. But, No, they went to church until they realized, why do we go to church? You know, they were coming out of that wartime era, and just it's hard for me to know exactly, you know, who he was. You know, I had a perfectly fine relationship with my father, but nothing at all like my relationship with my kids. My father was not involved in my life in that way. He was, to some degree, supportive, didn't stand in my way. You know, parenting now is far more hands-on in a way. And I don't know about other fellows out there, but certainly I was far more engaged with my kids' lives than my father was ever engaged in my life.
Yeah, I'm the same. You know, I have similar stories. Like my father passed away too, and I was actually just finished my fourth year of my undergrad degree, and came home to find out that he passed away. So I haven't known him either. And the reason I think I asked that question is just kind of curious, and I'm curious if how the relationship of your father, well, you in particular, but just in general, influences your parenting style. I guess that's kind of why. I'm just kind of curious.
I think the fact that my father never, rarely ever flew off the handle was, in my eyes anyway, quite a patient man. And I suppose so much stoic. He was in the forces all his life. He was a manager. He was looking after people, and from what I know, from what I've been told, he was an excellent manager. Like the people that were under him liked him. He wasn't a real authoritarian figure. He knew how to handle people, and I think that from my perspective, like I say, I didn't know him as well as perhaps my older brother and sisters, but the same thing, that he was pretty even-handed, and there was no screaming and violence or anything like that at all. He was just and he liked to drink, he liked to dance, he had a great sense of humor, so there was always lots of jokes in our house. So yeah, I think that more or less pleasant side of him certainly rubbed off on us.
Few more questions. Tell us what about your new project? Tell us about Dead Bob and
Dead Bob, if people are not aware, is No Means No had a character, Dead Bob, which was a very happy, smiling man who was hanging himself, that was with a shirt on that said, "You kill me." And which, of course, is a play on words. But it was a cover of an EP that we put out in 1984, I think we put that out, or 85. And when my brother, who is 8 years older than me, he retired, he basically had wanted to throw in the towel back in about 2015. He was pretty much, "I don't think I'm going to continue with this." And I moved on and was doing some other music with, I did a record and helped create a band called Compressor Head, which was a robot band from Berlin, which is was an amazing project. All the people I talked to, I let them know that was just an incredible project to work with these robots and the fellas that I met in Berlin. That kind of kept me busy musically, and then ended up getting involved with a coffee shop with a friend of mine who is Colin McRae, who is now playing bass with me. And then we also became a partnership with some other fellas and started a pub, not started, but took over a pub in 2017 here in Powell River. And I've been brewing beer for over 30 years as well as an amateur brewer. And I kind of thought, well, I'm out of music, that I think I should put on the big boy pants and become a professional brewer. I know how to make beer. People like my beer. So let's work towards a brew pub. And that was kind of the plan. Unfortunately, we opened 9 months before COVID, and that kind of put the brakes on everything. And the pub never really recovered. We never had the money to keep moving forward, to start brewing. So it seemed that my aspirations of being a punk rock brewer were not going to happen. And then I started, but COVID gave me time. Like it did so many people, life slowed down, and I got back into listening and working on just a lot of music that I had in various stages of completion, songs, demos, ideas. I was still engaged with No Means No fans on the No Means No Facebook page. And when I let this news out, it got a really big positive reaction. I was like, okay. And then finally the pub did slide under, and that was last year, the beginning of last year. And then I released this album called Dead Bob. I just thought that would be a good name to resurrect and call myself, as a bit of the of my history with No Means No, and but not wanting to be No Means No 2.0. and the music was original and different. There's still some No Means This is a song with my brothers that made it on the record and whatnot. But I released the album and I was out of the job. So, so well, all these people that helped me finish the record, maybe we can get together and be a band again. So if you'd asked me 2 or 3 years ago if I would be doing interviews and going out on tour and being a traveling musician again, I would have laughed. But here I am doing it again. So I've teamed up with my friend Colin McRae, who plays bass, who was, like I say, was a partner in the pub here with me. And he used to play in Pigment Vehicle, a Victoria band that was quite active in the 90s. And he really wanted to get back into music too. So he picked up his bass, which Jen played for 25 years. And we started learning the songs. And Byron Slack from The Invasives, another wonderful band from Surrey, I guess, White Rock, Surrey, put out tons of records, him and his brother and another, and their friend Hans. I don't know why they weren't way more popular than they were. They did pretty good, but yeah, they just didn't catch on, even though their albums were fantastic. Started working with him a little bit with the Robots, and Byron and that band played with our band a lot. So he's a good friend, and we had already begun collaborating, and he, including with Dead Bob. Ford Pier, who hails from Edmonton. I don't know if you know Ford. I've been playing. Yeah, we met Ford in Edmonton like when he was 16 years old in 1985. And I've been doing lots of music with him over the years in different projects. The Show Business Giants, we did a DOA album together. He was in DOA for a while, and I drummed on one album and played some music for him, played lots of shows with him. He's helped me with some writing with Dead Bob, so he's on board. And Byron's partner, who I only met recently through Byron, who Christy Lee Audette, plays in a band called Wrong, R-O-N-G, her own band. And she's multi-instrumentalist, is a great guitar player. She's a great performer, plays keyboards, also plays trumpet. And so she came up and put a little trumpet on the Dead Bob album. And then those are the five of us, said, let's try being a band. And that's kind of how it all got started. We started practicing and we played some shows last fall in British Columbia that went very well. So say, okay, well, I guess it's a thing. Let's just keep moving forward.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm really looking forward to your show at the Starlight in March.
Yeah.
In Edmonton. Yeah.
I
think I saw No Means No first time probably about 20 years ago, Polish Hall, and it's an honor to talk to you and be able to catch you at this Dead Bob show. I'm really excited.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's kind of a lot going on now with Alternative Tentacles re-releasing all the No Means No back catalog, or at least getting started. This conversation that actually started with Alternative Tentacles like 6 years ago. It's been a bit slow going. COVID didn't help and all that as well, but so Wrong is coming out now, and then they're just gonna re-release all of the catalog over the next 3 or 4 years, and then Jason Lamb in his book, the No Means No book, from obscurity to oblivion, has done really, really well. I'm doing some other interviews as well, just with Jason about the book. And so it's kind of like a lot of irons are burning all at once here, a bit of a No Means No resurrection, renaissance, and Dead Bob just, it's all kind of coming together at the same time. Not really planned, wasn't a big plan.
It's great. No, it's good. You know, give maybe a little plug to the book. Obviously you were involved in terms of like being interviewed by Jason and stuff. Is that kind of the
that's about it? Yeah. Yep. That was one of 500 interviews.
Yeah, I couldn't
literally.
I'm halfway through the book and I was like, whoa, man, there's a lot of ages of people and like the way
oh
he
yeah
talked
it
about it. It's
was
awesome.
it, yeah it kind of yeah it took over his life too. He didn't really realize just how much of a job it turned out to be. It's taken him 4 years, took 4 years to finally
Oh,
get
wow.
that thing done. And a lot of Paul Prescott, I think, his editor, did a lot of work, and he had a lot of helpers transcribing. I mean, so many interviews to transcribe. They had 20,000 images sent to them
Wow.
that they had to go through. Lots got left out. He'll tell you all about it. It was a big job, but he's very proud, and he should be, because he did an awesome job. People are really enjoying it. I haven't read it cover to cover, just kind of bits and pieces, leafing through it. As I like to tell everyone, I kind of know how it ends, so.
Like, how does it make you feel? Like you're, I don't know, like you've had this huge influence on so many people throughout the world, and especially Canada and like the punk rock world. And now there's like this book kind of in a sense memorializing it, kind of your band and your work. Is that something you share with your kids, or do they think that's really cool, or is this just
I
that's
guess
our
they think it's
dad, I guess.
cool. They, it's the band. I think with a lot of kids too, if grow up with someone who is a celebrity of some description, that whole part of their life is around them all the time. So it's, or they see it kind of firsthand. So it's not kind of like out of the blue. But for sure, like I say, Liam sent me this playlist and he's totally digging all this music. It's kind of weird for me because it's like, to me, it's like nostalgia. But to him, it's like all this cool music that, he explores and discovers in his own time and in his own way. So I hope that they are proud of their dad, and I hope that they find it interesting and fun. My older son is an actor, and he plays a little bit on Dead Bob album. He played an acoustic part for me. I had him join, and as an actor too, I had some ideas how you could incorporate a little theater into a punk rock. So maybe one day we'll work some,
A cabaret
get him up on stage. Yeah,
the
yeah. I
regular.
think there's a lot of boundaries that can be pushed away in music. The one thing I like about punk rock is that I grew up where pretty much anything goes, and that was really what the spirit was. So I like to make fun of everything that's going on, and I think that there's a lot of room to play with not just the music and the musical style, but also in the performance of that music. Just the fact that Ford Pier has taken it upon himself to learn how to play trombone with Christy playing trumpet, I couldn't be happier than to have a horn section for Dead Bob. So, and when the horns come in, it just changes everything. So, and actually Snuff, the band Snuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we saw Snuff early on in the late 80s, early 90s, and then when they threw in the trombone, it was just like, oh my God, it's perfect. I love that shit. I love turning punk rock on its head.
I caught a grindcore band called Null at the Starlight this past week, and so we're talking pretty extreme kind of grindcore death metal like stuff, and
Oh yeah.
they threw a trumpet in one of their songs, and it was like, holy cow. Yeah, it
Like
was like
what?
it,
What
yeah, it
the?
was just like my
What? What's
brain
that
couldn't compute.
sound?
Yeah, so I
I
can
know.
appreciate that. Last question, John. Any words of wisdom you'd like to leave for dads or any future dads out there listening?
Oh, words of wisdom. Oh, that's another hard one. Obviously you should have kids because you want them. But if it's an accident, then you still gotta love them. That's the end. You just gotta love them.
There we go. We'll end with that. You just gotta love them. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's really an honor to meet you and to talk to you. Make sure I come and say hi.
All right, that was John Wright of No Means No and Dead Bob and the Hanson Brothers on the Rad Dad Show. Thank you so much, John, for joining us. And I want to thank you for listening. The Rad Dad Show is a labor of love. People are always asking us, what's the best way to support you? To tell you the truth, the best way to support us is to share this episode, share our posts on social media, tell your friends, drop us a review on iTunes or Spotify. Those things are pretty simple, but they mean a lot to us. And if you take something away from an episode, let us know. We love hearing those stories too. And if you're looking for more Rad Dads content, find us wherever you get your podcasts or give us a follow on social media. On Instagram, you can find us at @rad_dads_show and on Facebook and Twitter and TikTok at @raddadsshow. And you can also head over to YouTube to watch all these interviews as well. So wherever you're watching or listening, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. It helps us a lot. Lastly, Rad Dads is first and foremost a community organization aimed at positive parenting. You can check out what we do over at raddadsyeg.com. That's raddadsyeg.com. Thanks for tuning in. In the meantime, and in between time, stay rad.